Okay, this is Carl Tyrell. I'm here with Richard Tyrell on the 21st of May, and I'm specifically interested in certain pieces of information you have about the historical or cultural record in Central, but that I know that you're knowledgeable about. But before we delve into that, I'd like to go back a little bit and talk about your personal background, your education, and what interests and what brought you to Central. So where were you born?
Stilton, Wisconsin.
And you grew up there?
Nope. I lived in Stilton for 2 years, then we moved to Rochester, Minnesota, till I was about 13 years old, then went to Boulder, Colorado. And I lived in Boulder till 75 when I moved up to Alaska.
And what brought you here?
I was interested in, you know, the outdoors. I was always into rock climbing and mountain climbing and backpacking, and I wanted to go live in the woods.
So what kind of specialized activities do you take part in?
Now I fly, trap, fish, hunt, camp, just enjoy the wilderness. A couple trap line cabins we use in the wintertime.
And where are those located?
Preacher Creek, Birch Creek, north of here, south of Fort Yukon.
And where do you hunt?
I hunt around the central area and up in the Brooks Range, mostly.
Would you call these subsistence activities?
Yes.
When do you do these activities, and can you tell me why you do them at those particular times of year?
When do I do them? In the spring with bear hunt. That's when the bears taste the best. And then in the fall, it's caribou and moose.
And in the winter, you...
And in the winter, it's trapping. Mm-hmm.
What kind of work have you done in the past while you were living here?
Living here, I've worked at Circle Hot Springs, I've worked in the gold mines, a little bit of construction, and mostly working for the state of Alaska on the road, maintaining the road, Department of Transportation.
Tell me a little bit about the times you were working at Circle Hot Springs.
I worked at Circle Hot Springs when I first came up here after I built a cabin and stuff, just to kind of get a feel for what was going on around here. I was a machinist when I came here, and there's no machinist job, so I just got any old job I could get, which turned out to be working at the Hot Springs, maintenance guy. You know, a little bit of everything. I bartended some. And
did you cook, too?
Yep, cooked. Did pretty much everything there is to do there.
Mm-hmm. What was, didn't you work there over a winter?
Yep. Yeah, I was a manager there one winter.
Mm-hmm. Did a lot of people come and go in those days?
You mean staying at the lodge?
Mm-hmm.
No, not a lot, but there'd be people fly in, you know, then the road was closed, so there'd be fly in people. There'd be three or four planes fly in, you know, for weekends and hang out and swim and party it up and fly back to Fairbanks. So I'd take care of their every need.
Cooking and bartending and cleaning. And
yep.
Were you the only employee there?
No, there was a couple other people. There was a while when I was the only one, but had two other people there most of the time.
Okay, and you also said that you were a gold miner. What creeks did you work on?
Worked on Bottom Dollar Creek. Was where we mined. Over the top, Portage Summit, and down the other side.
Okay. And didn't you work on Crooked Creek too?
Yeah, oh, that's right. Yeah, I worked on Crooked Creek. Yeah, a little bit on Butte Creek, a little bit on Portage Creek, but mostly Bottom Dollar and Crooked Creek.
And were these your mines, or did you work for someone else?
I worked for someone else. I did have some mining claims real early, and I did some hand mining on that place, but it wasn't what you'd call a real gold mine, you know, with equipment and everything. We're really doing some production.
So when you were working for these other places, they were you were operating equipment?
Operating equipment, yeah.
And the last job you said you worked mainly for Department of Transportation.
Yes.
What were you?
I was an heavy equipment operator.
So you have lots of experiences with this Dease Highway and Eagle Summit.
Yes.
Can you tell me some more about that? Can you describe Eagle Summit?
Eagle Summit, the road used to always be closed. And then in the spring, when I'd hire on, it was seasonal then, so you'd get hired in the spring, and you'd go up and plow, open the road.
In April?
In April, yeah. The road would be open by May, you know, end of April, beginning of May. Take bulldozers up there and those open the road. And then in October, we'd stop maintaining the road, get laid off, and the, you know, first blizzard, pretty much the road was closed the rest of the year. And then 87 or 88, somewhere in there, they started keeping the road open year-round. And I think it was 88 or 89 when we decided to leave the Black River trap line and come in and work year-round for the state. I can't remember the exact year, but it was 88 or so. You know, up till then I was seasonal, and then after that I went to work year-round maintaining the road. And, you know, you're pretty much up there every single day. Because the wind and snow would close every night, you go up the next day and open it up, let the people get through. Used to be a lot of traffic back then, trying to get to the hot springs, and there'd be a lot of people stuck, and you know, they'd try coming out at night when nobody was working up there and get buried and stuck. That was a big part of the job, was just getting people off the summit.
Can you tell me what it looks like up there on Eagle Summit on a snowy day?
Looks like being inside of a ping pong ball. Everything's just white out. Very difficult to drive around. Can't see where you're going. That's why so many people get stuck. You know, they get up there and they can't really see. There's drifts and you can't see to avoid them. They just drive right into them and get buried.
Because there's no trees, so the snow just blows.
Blows right in. Yeah, it's 3,600 feet above tree line. So it can be a beautiful day everywhere, but right on top. A lot of ground blizzards, you know.
There was one incident that I remember that you had gone after the road had closed early in the year, and you had gone to Fairbanks with a group of other people. This is before you were on the road, worked for the road commission.
Right, that was back in the old days when, you know, as soon as maintenance stopped, the road would be closed. And this one particular year, you know, it was probably late 70s or something like that, there was a miner who punched open the road to get out after the road was officially closed. So three or four of us decided to blast into Fairbanks, get some more, you know, supplies and groceries, and then come back that day, you know, before the road plugged up again. And we almost didn't make it. We drove to Fairbanks, shopped, but then when we came back, it had been blowing and drifted the road closed. And I had one of those tall Ford three-quarter ton pickups, you know, with a lot of ground clearance. And so I went in front, and I had chains for all four tires. So I chained up all four tires, went in front, and, you know, I'd drive through, knock down the drifts, bust up the drifts, and then back up, hook onto somebody, tow them through, back up, hook up onto somebody else, you know, and by then it's drifted, and we were shoveling, and had a heck of a time. We got, I don't know, stuck about 8 at night and didn't get off there till 2 or 3 in the morning. But hadn't been for that truck we had with all chained up, we'd have had all our rigs left on the hill till spring.
And I was also remembering about communications in those days, because
yeah, no phones and no sat phones or anything like that. So people had CBs with great big antennas on their houses. And a lot of people had boosters, so it was real common for people to communicate over the CB, and see, we had a CB at our house in over by the hot springs, and Mary Warren had a CB at her house in Central, and Hutchison's and Circle had a CB set up, so we were able to talk from the summit, I forget where, to Central, and then Central could talk to the Hot Springs, and the Hot Springs could talk to Circle or something like that. It was like a three-way relay, you know, because they couldn't always hear us, but usually somebody could hear us, you know, so we were able to say, yep, we're up here stuck. We're going to try to pull people out, and then they'd call Circle and tell them what was going on, and
Speaking of CB communication, there were a couple of old-timers that used to get on the CB every evening. Do you remember that?
Yep. Yeah, Gordon and Andy. Gordon was down at Jump Off, about 17 miles from Central, and Andy was in Central. And they'd get on the radio every night, like 8 o'clock at night. Hey, how you doing? Just chit-chat back and forth, kind of checking in on each other, and
the whole town would listen in.
And then everybody, you know, they were on their own special channel, so everybody switched to their channel and listen. Yeah, that was always funny.
So we've gone from Eagle Summit to thinking about communications here. I wanted to see if we could talk a little bit about the historical overview of the community. What do you know about Central's historical past?
Not a whole lot. It was, you know, started out as a gold mining stopping point, or whatever you want to call it. You know, there was gold discovered around here, and the river boats went to Circle, and then from Circle they'd come overland to Central, and, you know, Central was kind of a hub. You know, and people would strike out from here, and it was just kind of a hub, you know, Central was. You know, they had a roadhouse and trading post and stuff like that in the old days, and it just stayed. When I got here, there was one store and one restaurant bar.
The store was Vi and Frank's?
Yep, the corner store.
And the restaurant bar was?
It was Roy Riddle's, the Central Lodge.
And then there was the Hot Springs.
And there was the Hot Springs over at Circle Hot Springs. Yeah, then Circle Hot Springs was considered separate from Central. You know, now when you say Central, it incorporates the whole thing. Because really, there's more people over by Circle Hot Springs because of the state land deal than there is in Central. But then there was Central and Circle Hot Springs.
Okay, talk a little bit more about the state land deal. How did you get your land?
The Anilka thing locked up all the land, so nobody could buy any land. When I got here, you just couldn't get anything. And it was 78 or 79 when the state finally opened up some land for sale. And they subdivided lots, you know, like I say, mostly over by the Hot Springs. You know, they took subdivisions and they divide up like 100 3 to 5 acre lots. And then they had a drawing thing where you put your name in for what lot you wanted, and then you'd get your name picked out of a hat and you could buy that lot if you wanted to. So I put in for like 20 different lots and got picked for the one I'm on now. So that's how we got land. But that was the first land you could get for years and years and years. Everything was locked up. You know, for 5 or 7 years, you couldn't buy anything. So finally, after that, people could start buying land. And then, you know, it seemed like every year they'd open it up again, you know, and try to fill up the subdivisions, and, you know, so now we got people here and there, and actually there's more people living out of Central than in.
Is that one of the reasons you think people are drawn to Central? Or why would people come to Central?
Oh, yeah, that's one of the reasons, because you can get land, but people come here mostly for the idealistic, you know, live in the woods, live off the land, be on your own, you know, kind of lifestyle, and most of them last a year, if that, you know, maybe 2 or 3 at the most, and then they're gone again. A big, big turnover, because they get here and then there's nothing to do. You know, there's no work. Most of them really can't live off the land, so they come and go and come and go. So we've got lots and lots of empty houses. You know, they come out, build a place, and don't last and leave. Very few people are still here from when I came here.
About how many people were here when you first arrived?
15 were here then.
And do you know about how many people live here now?
Now there's 60 or 80. Changes a little bit, but it stays right about 60, 80 people. Mm-hmm. You know, 5 or 10 people will move out, and 5 or 10 people will move in. And they'll stay a couple years, and they'll leave, and another batch will come. It's just like a big rotation thing.
How do you think life here changes with the coming of new residents?
Yeah, don't know. You know, back when the road was closed, it changed some because the people that came here wanted to develop and expand, and, you know, they were, a lot of them were kind of the entrepreneur type people. They came here and saw it as an opportunity to make money. So they'd, you know, we'll campaign to get a school going and campaign to get the road open year-round. And, you know, in the beginning, a lot of people that came in wanted to change everything. And a lot of the people who'd been here before, you know, like me, didn't want it to change. You know, we came here because the way it was and liked it that way, but a lot of people came because they wanted to change it into where they came from.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, yeah, that did change a lot of the stuff. Like the school and the road being open year-round. But now the rotation, I don't think really changes much. You know, people come in and they got some ideas. Oh, let's have a community center or something, but it always just fizzles out, doesn't amount to anything.
Are there any stories that you can think about floods?
Lots of flood stories.
Okay. Can you tell me about some of them?
Spring, you know, we pretty much get floods every year with spring runoff. You know, working with DOT, you had to deal with floods, you know, every spring. Loaded wash out here and wash out there, but we've had a few floods, just, you know, rain-type floods. And 89, I think, was the biggest one I can remember. Rained and rained and rained. You know, drizzled and rained for like 5 days. And washed out the road in, I don't know, 8-9 places. You know, really bad. Washed out the road really bad. And it took about a week just to even get the road open, you know, to so people could get in and out. But yeah, that was a bad one, 89 flood.
That was Crooked Creek flooding?
Well, Crooked Creek was the worst because that cut right through town, but they all flooded. We had washouts everywhere. Hot Springs Road, the Circle Road, the Estes, the mining roads. And so many washouts, you didn't know which way to go first. Right at the bottom of Eagle Summit, Mammoth Creek washed out really bad. The bridge is just standing there and washed out on both sides of the bridge. So we had to get trucks from Fairbanks to come out to fill in that one because we couldn't even get to it. You know, the road right in front of the state shop was washed out. Road just like a half a mile out of town was washed out, so we couldn't even get to the worst washout. So the state crew from Fairbanks came out, and you know, they didn't know how bad it was. They just thought they'd dump a few gravel loads. They came with 5 or 8 trucks, something like that, all loaded, and they ended up spending about 5 days hauling gravel.
To make the road passable.
To make the road passable.
I suppose this kind of leads into your experiences of climate change. As a longtime resident, you have been here through some of the fires that have also changed the composition of the road, hasn't it?
Yep. Yeah, you wouldn't think a fire could hurt a road, but it does. We had the 04 fire burn from Central to Birch Creek, and that road has been a mess pretty much ever since. We're starting to get it under control now, but changes the, you know, the way the moss used to hold back water and let it come through slow. Well, with the moss all burnt up, the water just gushes down now. And washes out the road every spring, and after lots and lots of rain in the mountains, you know, they'll, like, if you get a little thunderstorm, it'll gush in one area and take out the road because the vegetation's not there to hold back and slow down the water. Lots of mudslides, you know, landslide type deals. And then last year from Birch Creek to Circle Burn, so now it's doing the same thing up there. And yeah, it really makes a mess.
Were you here in 1975?
Yes.
Can you tell me what the land and the weather was like then?
Yeah, the weather, you know, everybody says it used to be colder in the winter, and it pretty much was. You know, we'd get 50 below for 3 weeks, maybe a month. You know, 60 below a little bit. You know, and now, geez, it's about three winters when I don't think it ever even hit 50 below. Last winter we had 50 below, but only for a couple days, I think. But it used to be pretty common for it to be 50 below for weeks, you know, 40 below for weeks. And now it just doesn't seem to be like that. You know, we get some 30 below for weeks, but you don't see the long cold spells that we used to have. And we're getting more north, northeast winds than we used to have. You know, on Eagle Summit, in those early days, we always fought the southwest winds. You know, now it's pretty much north, northeast winds all the time. So the weather patterns have definitely changed.
Has that affected summer too as well?
Yeah, there's not as much snow in the winter. You know, it used to be you'd have snow, you know, above your knees to your waist pretty much every winter. And now if it's up to your knees, that's kind of unusual. So you got less runoff, everything is drier, creeks are lower, you know, fires like it.
Mm-hmm. Did you also notice any changes in the fall weather patterns?
Late in the fall, you know, fall, early winter, yeah, because we get those north, northeast winds. And before the Yukon River freezes, it's a lot of moisture off the river, so it pushes that river moist air up into our little valley here, and we get a lot of fog. We get more fog than we used to get. And it'll just hang in here for weeks and weeks and weeks. You know, fog, you know, makes it hard to fly. And, we didn't used to get as much of that as we get now, but that's back to the wind pattern. You know, if you get a south wind, it blows it out. West wind blows it out. But we got more east, northeast flow now, and it just packs the fog in here. Makes it really hard to fly. Makes it hard for the mail plane to get in.
Mm-hmm. Does that affect your flying too?
Yep.
How did the community react to the fire?
Freaked out. What do you mean? How'd they react?
What happened with
the kids?
A bunch
of people went to work.
Mm-hmm.
For the fire, and you know, a lot of them just did it to make money, but most people really wanted to help. You know, they wanted to do what they could to keep the town from burning up. And with the kids, it was really weird because the adults were working, but what do you do with your kids? You know, you're working 14 hours a day, 16 hours a day. You know, you don't want to leave them home, and plus they were evacuating a lot of homes and stuff, so they ended up, most people, I think, ended up sending their kids down to Dean Willis's gold mine on Crooked Creek. Because it was all mined around it, so it's just like a giant gravel pit. You know, it was a really good safe zone. Is that what they called it? I can't remember what they even called it.
I think they called it a safe zone.
These safe zones, you know, where you'd go and you'd be safe. So all the kids, or most of the kids, ended up down there at Willis's mine. And the parents and the adults ended up working on the fire, just calling and checking on their kids every day or two, seeing if everything was okay. Yeah, we lost 7 houses and, you know, came real close to losing a lot more.
Yeah, they were
very scary. Mm-hmm. And it went on and on and on, too. It just didn't end. Because we didn't have any rain, and it just fire just smoldered and smoldered and smoldered and burnt and burnt and burnt. Yeah, it was a bad deal. You know, ended up closing the road. You know, roads closed because of smoke and firefighters all over in the roads, and it was a big deal.
I'd like you to talk a little bit about your interaction with the Yukon Charlie. For many years, you used the Yukon Charlie during the spring.
Yep, we like to go bear hunting up there, and used to be when you wanted to go hunting somewhere, you just went. And there was a couple years there where the Yukon Charlie Rangers,
mm-hmm.
you know, they'd get there before we did, you know, because they're not there year-round. They'd come in the spring. A couple times we'd get in there in the spring and they'd already be there, and they'd be like, well, what are you doing here? Like, well, we're bear hunting. You know, and they'd want you to move your plane because it's in the way, and they'd want you to, you know, come and snoop around your camp. And you know, one year we had them following us around with radios, you know, taking our tail numbers and our names and calling them in to see if we were poachers of some sort. You know, that was one time that really sticks out in my mind. But yeah, we've been what I would call harassed, you know, maybe 3 years in a row, you know, totally making you feel unwelcome. And
these are years that you would camp there for
a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm. in the springtime
bear hunting. Yep. And yeah, they got a pretty bad reputation there for a while for bugging people. And there was a few phone calls to congressmen and senators made, and after that, we never had any problem after that. You know, we'd get there, and they wouldn't show up till after we were gone, or if they showed up, they'd come down and, welcome to Yukon Charlie, you know, we've got some clean water if you want it, and we'll stay out of your way, and whole atmosphere changed. Yeah, there was like 3 years where it was pretty, very strange.
You were here before the Yukon Charlie was established. Do you remember any of the meetings that took place in the very beginning when it was being established?
Yeah, they'd come in and give you a big song and dance on nothing's going to change. You can keep doing everything you've always done there before. And things did change. You know, now all of a sudden you can't run a three-wheeler and you can't ride a bicycle, and you get you know, kind of semi-harassed just for even showing up and trying to go bear hunting. And And it has gotten a lot better, but still, you know, we went to a wedding just a couple years ago up there, and here right in the middle of this wedding, the Park Service has to show up and, you know. It's like, well, what do you guys need to check a wedding for? We're having a wedding. And last fall, I know several people got pulled over. You know, they're running their boats, and pretty soon, hey, pull over, you know, check your papers. So things have changed.
You mentioned the bicycle. Yes, there was one year that I can remember that you flew in, or you and Phil flew in five bicycles or something for people to ride. And
next year it was illegal to have wheeled vehicles in there, because it might get taken over with bicyclers. And of course, it's okay for the park people to have bicycles in there, but we can't.
So, what has been your response to these kinds of interactions? Do you still go to the Yukon Charlie?
Oh, yeah, I still go. We boat up in there every once in a while, but we don't bear hunt up there every spring like we used to.
Can you describe any of the trails in the area, and what do you know about their use?
You mean like the Beelenberg Trail?
Sure, we can talk about the Beelenberg Trail. Do you use the Beelenberg?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, use the Beelenberg Trail. And
it goes from Central Circle Hot Springs.
Circle Hot Springs to Woodchopper to Coal Creek. And it's a mining trail is what it was. You know, people haul stuff in and out of there, get the equipment in and out over the Beelenberg Trail. Now there's nobody mining in there, so it's not used that way anymore. Now it's pretty much just a snow machine trail.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's about the only trail I know of going in there, you know, from this end.
Did you want to express any advice about the management of the preserve? Be more friendly, or?
No, they're pretty friendly now, you know. I mean, things have changed a lot since those few bad years.
Good. Let's close with thinking about the future of Central. What do you think the future will hold for Central?
I don't know. We're slowly turning into more of a retirement town. You know, because there isn't any work. You know, there's used to be 10 jobs, now there's 5. And there's just nowhere for anybody to work. So we're slowly turning into a retirement community. We got more and more old people. You know, because it is cheap to live here. And I think we're just going to kind of slowly fizzle out, turn into a ghost town around here. You know, the Hot Springs is closed. Hot Springs was the ticket. I mean, people came up to go to the Hot Springs. And why they were here, they drove to the Yukon River to see the river. But now, you know, people don't drive up to see the river, really. You know, and spend any money or anything, and there's no store anymore in Central, so we're just kind of slowly fizzling out. We've got some gold mines here. Most of them are people that don't live here. You know, they come in, mine, and leave. There's a couple local miners, but, you know, still it's only three or four jobs. Futura Central is looking grim.
I also made a note here that I wanted to ask you about some of the stories about people you know that have come and gone over the years. Were there any particularly lots, colorful people?
Lots of weirdos, end of the roaders.
Can you think of anyone in particular?
Oh, I don't know. I can think of lots of them. One guy, he was going to come here and get seals in the spring. And everybody's like, seals, huh? In interior Alaska. Well, he was going to put sharp stakes in the creek. So when the seals came up, they'd get speared on these sharp stakes. He's going to harvest seals. We get all kinds of dingbats like that. We had one guy who was going to heat his house with chicken manure. We've had, just tons of people like that. They're going to come in, they're going to live off the land, and they, 2 weeks or a month later, you see them taking off. Eating rabbits isn't any fun after a while. But we've had a lot of them come and go. A lot of shyster miners and
okay, well, thank you very much for doing the interview with me.
You know how?
Yeah, I can't really do that. It starts a different recording. So, unless you want to tell one of those shyster stories. All right. Okay, well, thank you very much.